Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
And welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Matterface, TalkSport's chief of football correspondent, Alex Crook, an FA Cup winner from 1997. Foster's male model, it is former West Ham and Chelsea defender, Scott Minto. Loads to get through on the show, so let's start at the top of the table. What was a crucial victory at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium? The North London derby was dramatic, but every Premier League game is dramatic.
And historic North London derby, whichever way you look at it.
We are so lucky to have the possibility to make people happy.
15 minutes on the clock, Tottenham 0, Arsenal 1.
Arsenal are very, very good. They're a good side now. They're focusing on those details and we're not there yet.
Just as Tottenham had a couple of penalty appeals waved away at one end, Arsenal broke rapidly at the other. Bukayo Saka, brilliant from him.
And I don't understand, you know, when you're playing against quality like Saka, you have to show him onto his weaker foot.
Sensational. Tottenham 0, Arsenal 3. Kai Havertz with a bullet header from point-blank range.
Arsenal have been ruthless, Crookie. Absolutely ruthless and clinical when they've had the chances.
And it's an absolute gift. Tottenham 1, Arsenal 3. David Raya, he's just had an absolute calamity. They couldn't, could they?
Start to suffer, be humble, defend your box because they throw everything at us.
86 minutes on the clock. Penalty kick here, Tottenham. Staggered run up from Son and he lashes it right-footed into the top right corner.
That's whether Arsenal will see this last minute and a half out.
And there is the full-time whistle. It's a crucial North London derby victory for Arsenal. This North London derby always delivers. It finished Tottenham 2, Arsenal 3.
Scotty, baby, you were otherwise engaged yesterday, weren't you? You couldn't come and do the Sunday session because you were hosting Charlton's Player of the Year. But I know that you had a keen eye on the Tottenham-Arsenal game. Crook, you had more than a keen eye on it. You were there in the thick of the action. What was the atmosphere like when it went to 3-0?
There were a lot of Tottenham fans who took a while to reclaim their seats after half-time, as you pointed out on your monitor. But to be fair, most of them did stick it out until the bitter end. And obviously, after the mistake from David Raya, Arsenal made harder work of it than I think they needed to. It's a strange old game, you know, because Tottenham were the better team in the first half, but they got caught on two set pieces. The defending for the Saka goal was lamentable and they lost the game in those moments. I think when you look at Tottenham over the course of the season, you know they're a team that defensively, with this high line, the way that Postecoglou insists on playing, can be got at. And fair play to Mikel Arteta, he took full advantage.
Well, it was interesting because hosting the Sunday session, we had a lot of reaction to it. In fact, I took my kids to school on Monday morning and I got stopped at the school gates by a Tottenham fan. I live in Manchester. I didn't even know there were that many Tottenham fans in Manchester, who said to me, "Your show yesterday, everybody ringing up and trying to get rid of Ange. He needs at least three transfer windows." I was like, "Yeah, I'm with you. Patience is the order of the day." However, Scott Minto, I must say that if you were plotting a way to beat Tottenham Hotspur, you would pick on set pieces because the goalkeeper's too weak from corners in particular, and counter-attacking and hitting them behind their high line. That's exactly what Arsenal did, and in 38 minutes had scored three goals. So tactically, Ange Postecoglou got it all wrong.
Well, yes, but I do agree with Crookie that I thought that Spurs were actually very good and a lot better than I thought they'd be, and Arsenal weren't quite as dominant.
Doesn't matter if you concede three goals in 38 minutes.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. No, Arsenal were very clever. Arsenal showed exactly where their mentality is right now, that they're title winning, simple as that. But it was two set pieces and a counter-attack. And yeah, absolutely. So this game for me was won on moments rather than, you know, Arsenal dominating the game. But absolutely, set pieces. We've been together working on Arsenal games, Sam, and we've talked about how, remember the Forest game, you know, you whip the balls in, and you have to say, I don't think you necessarily need a set piece coach, but you do need to work very hard on set pieces. And I think Arsenal clearly are a team, as we saw with Manchester City with the crucial first goal at the City Ground as well. That came from a set piece. You know, set pieces have always been really, really important. And I think with Saka, the way he scored his goal was brilliant. Absolutely, Ben Davies shouldn't be allowing him onside. But again, or inside, again, you look at what Haaland did with Murillo and with his goal. He showed him on his right foot and he still scored. These strikers are so difficult to mark, but absolutely, Davis should have been showing him down on the right-hand side, and then you gamble that his right foot's not as good as his left. But as a whole, I thought Arsenal were superb. You know, they were really difficult, apart from obviously making individual mistakes. And that's where this game was won, really. You know, they absolutely capitulated or dominated Spurs in the way they should do in the set pieces.
There's loads of sort of marginal moments in the game, which if they'd gone the other way, might have turned the tide, but they didn't. And one of those was the Van de Ven goal, which was ruled out because Gabriel has been in the gym working on his glutes and they're so slim and tight, they're just not big enough to play Van de Ven onside. Then there was the moment where Saka scored the goal and they felt, the Tottenham fans, that Kulusevski was fouled. I don't think it's a foul. I think it's a contact action in a running moment. They came together as they both of them were sort of running through the penalty area. I don't think that's a foul. I think the referee was right to play on there. Obviously, David Raya makes a mistake and makes it more difficult for them. But I think the most important thing, the most interesting thing about the game was Arsenal's naughtiness, their dark arts. I mean, Ben White, he looks like he could be in the next series of Love Island. However, he showed or zero Benidorm. Charm. Yeah, either way. But he was trying to undress Vicario with those gloves, wasn't he? He was trying to take those off during... And actually, it was just before the Højbjerg own goal. And Vicario, if you watch it, dives about half a second after the ball's gone past him because he's probably still distracted from having a tussle with Ben White. Get off my gloves, do you know what I mean? I mean, I just thought that was quite interesting. What do we make of that tactic? Are we okay with it? Is it cynical? Is it? I mean, if it's against you, obviously Tottenham fans will be going crazy about it and he will be the devil incarnate.
Yeah, but Arsenal fans will absolutely love it. And I think that's what you have to say about this Arsenal team compared to previous seasons, certainly compared to last season. They've got that little bit of menace about them now. They've got that extra winning mentality that maybe wasn't there last season. And this is all part of the package. Can I also just pick out Kai Havertz for special praise as well? Because I was one of many doubters when they paid the money to sign him. But I thought he was terrific yesterday. I thought he was their man of the match.
Yeah, without doubt. I thought he's... I mean, the pass for the Saka goal is exquisite. However, the touch from Saka is exquisite as well to take it out of the sky and then keep it moving as well. Brilliant. But that was just a brilliant move from Arsenal, and I think they deserve a lot of credit. They're still very much in the title race. They, you know, you never know. I mean, with Tottenham performing like they did in the second half, you can see that they can give people a game, can't they? I mean, I think against the big boys, they're always going to struggle, especially those who are bright enough to realise how, you know, there are easy ways of easy wins against Tottenham. Not easy wins in terms of games. I mean, easy wins in terms of territory and chances and creating opportunities. And Manchester City, who they play in a couple of weeks, Chelsea, who they play on Thursday, will certainly try to exploit that. So I suppose the key questions now are, Tottenham very much behind the eight ball in terms of the top four. Is their quest for Champions League football over, Scott? And how does that reflect on their season? Bearing in mind, they made such a brilliant start. And if you look at the statistics from the beginning of the season, if anyone makes the kind of start that they got, 90% of the time they make it to the top four.
Yeah, look, we said that, and there were a few Spurs fans who were going over the top, but I think any sensible person would have said, look, from where they've come from last season and the vibe that they had under Antonio Conte, you know, they were never going to win the title. Then it was about finishing top four. I don't think they'll finish top four. I changed my mind a few weeks ago. I think they dropped too many points, for even though Villa may well drop some points as well because of Europe. I still think that it's a massive improvement. Is it success? I wouldn't call it success, but I would say, you know, as I say, the whole vibe has changed. And from where they were, not just in terms of the table, you're fighting for fourth. They finished eighth last season, so that's an improvement there. But the football now, the Spurs fans, of course, they want to win trophies. They want to see their team winning trophies. But first and foremost, they want to enjoy their football. The only thing I'd say is this is a honeymoon season for Ange, because it was so bad last season. He can't afford to be having this type of high line and, you know, already hearing, as you say in the Sunday session, you know, people calling for his job. I mean, wow. After what he's done this season, but everybody is still very much for him, or 99%. If he carries on playing like this, which he's saying that's what he'll do, then I think next season's could be a tough one for him if they don't start too well.
And we're all very reactionary nowadays. You know, a couple of results can turn the tide very, very quickly. The question I've got about Ange Postecoglou, Crook, is that I admire the way that he has changed the mood around Tottenham Hotspur. And as Scott said, because he's now down with the kids, he's obviously been on Snapchat, the vibe. It comes a point where you have to be slightly pragmatic. Arteta is very good at this, actually. He's got a certain philosophy about how to play. But actually, last year he realised he needed a little bit of a variation in their play. So David Raya came in, Kai Havertz came in. It meant that they'd go a little bit longer up to Kai Havertz and play from there if necessary. Sometimes you just have to do that. Even Pep Guardiola has evolved over time. If you look at the amount of long balls that Manchester City play now, it would almost be sacrilege if he had done that when he was at Barcelona. He wouldn't even allow a long ball. Any ball over 20 yards and he would have been pulling out the hair, the very small amount of hair that he had when he was at Barcelona. So those top managers do bring in variation to their play. And I think Ange Postecoglou, if he's wedded to just one style and only ever playing a plan A, then I think he will end up coming a cropper in the not-too-distant future, because you need to be able to adapt to those other teams that are sometimes better than you.
Otherwise, you become easy to play against. Opposing managers know how you're going to line up and they know what weaknesses you have to exploit. So I make you right. I don't think we can judge Ange Postecoglou as Tottenham manager until this time next season, because on the face of it, he's lost Harry Kane, arguably the greatest number nine in the world, and still managed to improve the team. He's going to improve their league position on last season as well. But I think you have to factor in just how poor Manchester United and Chelsea in particular have been. And we expect there to be a change of manager now, I think, at Old Trafford. We expect Chelsea, maybe if Pochettino stays, to give him more autonomy in the transfer market. So I think both of those teams will get better. The fact that Tottenham have finished behind Aston Villa, I still think is a little bit of a negative against Ange Postecoglou, because I'm not sure many of us predicted that at the start of the season. So if this time next year they're challenging for the Champions League once again, then I think he's been a success. If they're back in their usual position of 7th or 8th, then I think questions will be asked. And I think that the latter is a possibility, because other teams will improve.
There's no way that their usual position is 7th or 8th. They've been very much in the Champions League or in and around it over the course of the last 10 years. So let's not reinvent history. The point is, if they do regress next year, then you'll be asking the question, well, what was the fuss about? You might as well have just had Conte and Mourinho and getting to the Champions League.
The thing is, I do agree with Crookie. I mean, yeah, he's tried to maybe massage the figures there, but if they do finish 7th or 8th next season, then it is worse than what it's been of recent times.
I agree with you.
They're not usually
7th or 8th.
No, you're right. But I was also listening before the game, and I did the Charlton thing, but I watched the whole game. But I was even listening to the radio beforehand, and there were Spurs fans calling in saying, I'm dreading this game, because we know that Ange is going to play the same way. Arteta knows that Ange is going to play the same way. So everybody knows what the tactics are, and they have players good enough to execute that. And if Tottenham do have their best 11, Absolutely. If Tottenham have their best 11, they can match almost anyone. If they don't, even just one or two people out, then he has to just tweak his tactics a little bit. And the thing is, he seems so adamant that this is what I do. I'll live or die by the sword. As I say, this season was a honeymoon season. Let's see how next season goes.
Yeah, I don't think also we can make out that it was close, because in the 84th minute, it was 3-1 and the one came from a mistake from Arsenal. So let's, you know, I know the scoreline looks a little bit closer than a thrashing, but actually they were well beaten. They were beaten at the end of the first half. Arsenal may have taken their foot off the gas in the second half. They had a 3-goal lead. That is possible. The previous game they played was away at Newcastle and they lost that game 4. So they got Chelsea on Thursday night. They can't afford to get whacked again at Stamford Bridge. And if I remember rightly, Chelsea got 4 the last time they played them. So let's see what happens with Spurs and whether or not they managed to rectify those issues for Thursday night. The game, by the way, is live on TalkSport. Is that with you? Am I doing that with you, Scott? Are you involved in that?
No.
Involved
in that? No, I haven't been called in for that one, mate.
Scott, they might need you at left back, to be fair, after what I saw from Mark Cucurella over the last couple of days.
Surely the Klopp Liverpool love story can't just peter out. They have been number one longer than anyone else this season, but not anymore.
Absolutely right to feel massively disappointed and frustrated, clear.
Jarrod Bowen into the box, delivering across. Antonio! 2-2! Another headed goal, which is Liverpool's undoing, and that is why they will not win the Premier League. Liverpool's season, like their manager's time in the dugout, is almost over.
Say, this is simply sensational. Tottenham 0, Arsenal 3. It's Kai Havertz with a bullet header.
Start to suffer, be humble, defend your box, because they throw everything at us, and pray and have a bit of luck.
And there is the full-time whistle. It's a crucial North London derby victory for Arsenal. They've beaten their arch rivals by 3-2.
This Premier League title race is really going from one end to the other.
Forest 0, Manchester City 2. It's as you were at the top of the Premier League.
But in the same time, it's so exciting, you know, fighting again for the Premier League. It's a dream come true.
West Ham 2, Liverpool 2. Liverpool seem to have kissed goodbye to any hopes of the title, sadly, for Jurgen Klopp. West Ham managing to rescue a point back at the London Stadium. Again, Liverpool did okay in this game. They played all right in the build-up to the penalty area, missed some key chances. I must admit, though, there doesn't seem to be a harmonious atmosphere amongst the Liverpool players. Now, the Mo Salah thing, I think, is obviously going to grab all the headlines, right? But the reason they concede the first goal is because Virgil van Dijk is still rollicking Trent Alexander-Arnold as West Ham quickly take a corner. And then they sort of shuffle to get back into position because he's still rowing and the ball comes in. They switch off just momentarily and that allows Bowen just to flick the ball in, and it's 1-0 to West Ham United. Obviously, I mean, it doesn't really matter anymore, does it? But it's not a great way for it all to end, is it? Falling out publicly.
No, and we touched on it in the preview pod, the post-match comments of Virgil van Dijk after the derby, which I wasn't particularly impressed with. It felt like he was trying to blame his teammates rather than take collective responsibility as a captain should. And I have to say, there's been a lot of debate. I think it's divided the Liverpool fan base. Are we in Camp Klopp or Camp Salah? And I think you have to be in league with a manager, because if Jurgen Klopp hasn't announced that he's leaving at the end of the season, Mo Salah doesn't do that. If he thinks Jurgen Klopp is still going to be the gaffer come the start of next season, he doesn't chuck his toys out the pram, certainly not in public anyway. And I think it's a really bad look from a player who himself probably is coming to the end of his days at Anfield. I think it's likely now that he'll end up in Saudi Arabia come the end of the season. And I think it was really unsavoury, and I think it was really unprofessional from Salah as well, to be honest.
I thought it was interesting because like you said, it looked like a player given license to do what he wanted, because he knows that one, the title's gone, two, the manager's gone, and three, he's probably gone, Scott. But again, that's not great either. If that is the case, let's just say he does leave, I hope that they get a huge amount of money for him, because I do think, actually, Liverpool have sort of started this rebuild. It should never have been in the title race, really. The number of players that they turned over at the end of last season, experienced players, and replaced them with players and playing in the Premier League before, should never happen that they got this close. But they did, and that's credit to them their younger players coming through, and the manager, who deserves a lot of respect, in my opinion. Okay, you can say, oh, he's only won one Premier League. Yeah, you try and win a Premier League against Pep Guardiola. Not the easiest thing to do in the world. However, I will say, if they do get a huge amount of money, there's a lot that they can do with that money to make sure they enhance that squad and take it a step forward under a new manager. It's a big, big summer with all the changes at Liverpool.
It's a big summer, and it's a perfect opportunity if Arne Slot does like different type players or wants players in to sell someone like Mo Salah, which I think the Liverpool fans would understand. With 1 year left in his contract, he's in his early 30s. If they're big, you know, fee does come in of £120, £150 million, I think it just makes financial sense and a way to keep on rebuilding. I'm with you. I think it's for Liverpool to have come this far. I didn't see it at the start of the season because the whole midfield and leaders on and off the pitch were gone. You know, the whole midfield was gutted and new people coming in. Look, I, you know, no one really particularly likes to see it. I don't think it's a massive thing. Everyone's talking about it. You know, it's the world we live in right now. A manager and a star player have had a go at each other a little bit.
You ever have a go at the manager on the sidelines?
No, I don't think it should happen. But if it happens, for me, it's not a massive thing. I think it tells us that Salah's not happy. I mean, it's interesting watching Alan Shearer. He sort of made a comment as if, like, you know, he should never be dropped or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. And I think when you've been that star of the team, you feel like even if you're not playing well, you should be on the team sheet in the 11 straight away.
Let's have it right. He hasn't been playing well. He hasn't delivered.
That's what I was just about to say. Mo Salah's not been playing well enough to justify a place in the side. You know, and it's been going on for some time now, perhaps even since his injury after the AFCON.
It is, yeah.
So, you know, I think he's probably been given long enough in the team. And there comes a time where Jurgen Klopp's thinking, our season's falling apart, I've got to make changes. And I think he was right to do that. Do I think it should happen? No. Do I think it's a massive thing? No. I think they probably made up afterwards. They both know they're probably going to part ways. Certainly one of them will. I wouldn't be surprised. Let's have a look at the next. You're looking at me. You're looking at me as if, you know, it might not happen. Let's have a look if he's on the team sheet for the next game.
The reason I pulled the face was because you said that I'm sure they made up afterwards. But Jurgen Klopp told me it was done in the dressing room, finished. We've sorted it out. And then 2 minutes later, Mo Salah came walking past telling everybody, if I speak today, there will be fire, fueling the flames again. So, like, you know, hopefully...
Hey, No.
I'm sure it was sorted out on the bus.
No. When I say afterwards, I just mean over the next few days. It wasn't sorted. Clearly, Salah was still angry. But, you know, that's the ego of a top-class player that thinks that whether he's playing well or not, he should be in the side because of what he's capable of doing.
Okay, so most highest-profile player that you've played with who fell out with a manager. I'm going to guess here that it was Paolo Di Canio.
Good guess.
But what was that like in the dressing room when that's going on for everybody else?
To be honest with you, Paolo was Paolo. You know, he was a genius on the pitch and he was crazy off it. So, you know, there was a lot of antics, whether it be at the manager or whether it just be at other players or whether it just be at himself, you know, picking a table up at half time and throwing the cups and he's ranting and raving and we're expecting Harry to come and say something and Harry just keeps it quiet and let him run out of steam. And then, you know, it was exactly the right thing to do. You know, and Mo Salah, I think, is, should we say, a calmer guy than Paolo Di Canio. So, look, you know, he's not happy. He's frustrated with his own form. He's frustrated that he hasn't got the ability to put that right. He thinks what he's done for Liverpool, he should be on the team sheet all the time. But I actually agree with the decision that Jurgen Klopp made. I think he absolutely didn't deserve a starting place. But then you're looking at someone who's been there and it's like, you give me 11 minutes. That's the thing. You're giving me 11 minutes, but that's what the team needed at that particular point. The equaliser came, going to make some subs to try and turn things around. A normal person, I say normal, that's not the wrong word, not the right word. A typical professional would say, right, I'll go on and do the business for the team. A superstar will say, you're treating me like rubbish, you know, and you just got to deal with that. And they'll deal with that over the next few days.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. They've got a couple more games to go before Klopp leaves, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere near winning the title. It would just be the League Cup for Liverpool this time around. The title, the preserve of Arsenal and Manchester City. And it looks like Aston Villa are nailed on for the Champions League after they escaped with a point at home to Chelsea.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
There's real belief that Unai Emery can lead them back to Europe's top table. Quick ball up the inside left channel. Digne cuts it across and it's turned in! I think it may have been an own goal, that, off Marc Cucurella.
That's a brilliant start for the home side.
Now Chelsea are breaking through at the other end. Jackson is clear here and he's poked it into the top corner. Offside against Jackson. Cucurella brings it down, digs it in, headed off the post by Jackson this time. 6 yards out.
That has to find the back of the net.
I would say a very good response from Chelsea.
Right about Aston Villa, look, brilliant start to the game. They've not had a lot of possession in the game.
Now Rodgers on the edge of the penalty area, right footed low shot, and he's picked up the bottom corner. Gallagher in the penalty area, Madueke rolls it into the bottom corner. Chelsea are back in it now.
I think we've seen both sides of Chelsea today, haven't we? First half and second half. Naive in the first 45 minutes, but this is what they can produce.
Conor Gallagher, left footed corner! Conor Gallagher with a magnificent goal to draw Chelsea level.
But now Chelsea want to win it.
Disasi has scored the winner for Chelsea.
Looked like Diego Carlos was waiting for the referee to blow his whistle.
VAR checking it, Mickey. Ah. Possible foul. And the goal is ruled out. And what incredible drama. It finishes 2-2 here at Villa Park.
Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 3. Oh, hold on a second. Apparently they've changed it. Did they change it? Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 2. Poch's side came back from 2 goals down to make a dent in Aston Villa's top four hopes. But really and truly, their blushes were spared Aston Villa by the fact that they ended up not conceding a third goal, which I think they should have done. And the reason I think they should have done is this. The referee can see the foul or contact between Diego Carlos and Benoit Badiashile. Diego Carlos backs into Badiashile. Badiashile's just tougher and stronger and edges him out of the way, gives him a little push and says, get out of the way. Sends the ball across the face of goal. De Sassi finishes it. Now, the referee standing there watching that moment says, play on, goal given. VAR, Chris Kavanagh, back in Stockley Park, says, oh, hold on a second, there was a foul in the build-up here. That's not the remit of VAR, by the way. The remit of VAR is to pick on clear and obvious errors that the referee has not spotted. If the referee has seen it and doesn't think it's significant or doesn't give it is not Chris Kavanagh's job to re-referee the game. Ange Postecoglou's got a point here because he said now the game is not being refereed by the person inside the stadium, it's actually the person outside the stadium. And that, for me, is the bit where it goes wrong. Don't tell me all season that you're only going to get involved for clear and obvious errors, that you're reducing the bar of your interventions because you only want a light touch, and then get involved when the referee has seen the incident. To me, I don't think there was enough for him to get involved. I also understand that it's completely down to what the referee said to the VAR. The VAR has been told by the referee that there's no contact, then he's made a clear and obvious error, and the VAR has to intervene and say, actually, there was quite significant contact. That's different. If the referee has said, I've seen it, I don't think there's anything in it, it's not down to the VAR to correct him, because it's not clear and it's not obvious. It's not clear and it's not obvious because Crook thinks it's a foul, and I don't think it's a foul. Perry Groves doesn't think it's a foul. Mickey Gray does think it's a foul. Scott, what do you think?
I do think it's a foul, but I'm totally with you.
It is subjective. So therefore, it's not clear and it's not obvious.
Absolutely. That's my point. I do think it's a foul, but it's not a clear and obvious error. And you know what? Angie's right in that respect. We have to be careful that VAR is not re-refereeing, but it's going from game to game to game. So all the critics of the VAR have absolutely a spot on in what they're saying. You know I'm for VAR, but not the way it's done. That goal should have been allowed, even though I think it was a foul, because VAR shouldn't have got involved.
I'm moving to Sweden. I'm going to Sweden. I did a lot of work on this VAR.
It's
stuff,
expensive.
Right? I went to all the seminars. I've been involved in a lot of the sort of briefings. I've spoken to people. I did the first ever international game with VAR for ITV. I've followed it all the way. I've put my heart and soul into learning about the laws of the game to ensure that I understand what happens in those VAR moments, right? I now hate it. I hate it. I hate it because of Coventry. I hate it because of the Mickey van der Ven goal. I hate it because of that situation at Aston Villa on Saturday night. I hate it. I don't want it anymore. I'm moving to Sweden. I'm going to go there. I'm going to just... They were sensible. All the fans group, they wrote letters to the federation and said, don't bring it in. And the Swedish authorities went, you know what? If you don't want it, we won't have it. It's okay. We'll leave it and put it to one side. Good on them. Well done, Sweden. Once again, a leader in the world of social justice. Beautiful. Anyway, what it has done, it upset. I mean, Poch was furious following the game, claiming that VAR is damaging English football. I mean, I do actually think he has got a point here, Crook. It does sort of suck the joy out of life, doesn't it?
Yeah, but as I've said time and again on this podcast, it's not a problem with the technology. It's a problem with the way that it's used. And it's being used a lot more than we were promised when it came in. I think the phrase at the time from the PGMOL was minimal interference for maximum benefit. Well, we're not seeing minimal interference because they are re-refereeing games. And you're dead right. I do think it was a foul. I think it was quite a clever foul. I think he waited for the Villa player to jump and then gave him a nudge that took him off balance. However, if the referee has seen that and deemed in real time that it isn't a foul, then VAR should not even be pressing that button to speak in his ear. They should not be getting involved. So I make you dead right. And I think until Howard Webb gets a grip of it, we're going to see more of these kind of incidents. Just let the game flow. As seems to work perfectly, by the way, when you watch Champions League matches, the way they use VAR, the checks are over in the blink of an eye. It's absolutely fantastic. If UEFA officials can get it right, why can't our referees?
Do you know what, Sam? Howard Webb has to be really strong here because there will never be a point where everyone is happy. You know, if they hadn't got involved, people would be saying, that's a foul.
I agree.
You know, so there will always be something.
Stick to your principles. Once you've said, we are not going to get involved unless it is a massive howler, clear and obvious. Don't get involved unless it is clear and obvious. Don't get involved 1 week and don't get involved the next week. Don't say we've got a high bar this week and then it's a low bar next week. Don't give a handball for a situation in the cup final like Jack Grealish, where it hits his fingertips as it goes through. He doesn't even know anything about it. And then not give a penalty for Vitinha. By the way, neither of them are penalties. Never should be given. But don't give one and not the other. Don't give any of them. And that is the problem. That's why people are annoyed about it. Ange, God bless him, said the right thing after the game. That's why I don't celebrate goals anymore. How bad is that? That's why we go to football. That moment when the goal goes in is the best moment for a supporter. It's the best moment for everybody. But if you can't celebrate a goal, what's the point? What is the point? Viva Las Vegas! I'm going to Sweden. Anyway.
Well said, Sam, by the way. Well said.
Aston Villa. I mean, they'll be a little bit annoyed not to have gone 9 points ahead of Spurs, but ultimately they've had a brilliant season. They've done a great job. They're not always going to win every single game because they're a little bit like Spurs, a bit more pragmatism as they play that high line. And Crookie, actually, you said at the beginning of the season you thought you'd have a really good campaign. I don't think even in their wildest dreams they expected to be almost unchallenged now in fourth.
No, and actually, I think I'm going on with Jim and Simon on Tuesday because it's now mathematically impossible for Newcastle to finish above Aston Villa. So that £500 charity money is coming my way. And you look at the Champions League picture, they need one win, Villa, for their final three games to be absolutely certain. That's assuming that Tottenham win all of their matches, which clearly isn't going to happen. So it's been a brilliant season. And I'm really intrigued now to see what they do in the summer to try and kick on, because obviously we had Newcastle in similar territory last year where they overachieved and probably haven't been able to kick on, not necessarily any fault of Eddie Howe, but because of the financial situation. So can Villa find a way around the current PSR rules? Will there be new PSR rules that actually make it easier for them? And can they back Unai Emery? A massive coup for them to get him to sign a new contract last week, because there were big clubs all around Europe keeping an eye on what he's been doing, and rightly so.
And can they finish with a European trophy as well? They're going to finish above Manchester United for the first time in the Premier League era. They're going to finish in the top five for the first time since 96-97. They could win a European trophy for the first time since they won the European Cup in 1982, Scott.
I tell you what, there's also someone else who's really happy as well that Villa are finishing above Newcastle, and that's Mrs. C. When she heard that bet live on air, I texted him straight afterwards, and he said, "Yeah, the missus wasn't happy."
You're right. She was fuming, but it will all go to a good cause, and I look forward to Jim handing over. Hopefully, not in twopence pieces, as of course Simon Jordan famously did to him last year.
Is he ever going to win a bet, Jim? That's the next question. Actually, the question is that having won one bet, Crook, and you know you don't have to worry about the fact that he's shelling out £500, are you, though, worried about the fact that you still might have to squeeze into my medium Chelsea shirt? Because Manchester United drop points at home again against Burnley. So let's dive into the depths of the table.
Is Liverpool's undoing, and that is why they will not win the Premier League.
Hamdouni on his right foot against Inanna and sends him the wrong way. Manchester United 1, Burnley 1.
Oh no, Onana, he has had an absolute shocker.
Gets it across to Wilson! Newcastle 5, Sheffield United 1. Sheffield United are down and they're out of the Premier League.
And it's finished Everton 1, Brentford 0, and Everton are officially safe from relegation.
Luton with three games to go to save their season. Final score, Wolves 2, Luton 1.
Conor Gallagher left-footed corner! Conor Gallagher with a magnificent goal to draw Chelsea level!
Oh, Premier League, we love you. It finishes 2-2 here at Villa Park. Chelsea thought they'd won it right at the end, and Chelsea are really not happy with the referee.
Bournemouth 3, Brighton 0. Justin Kluivert has scored.
And there is the full-time whistle. It's a crucial North London derby victory for Arsenal. They've beaten their arch rivals by 3-2.
It has finished Forest 0, Manchester City 2. It's as you were at the top of the Premier League. Pep's men, a point behind leaders Arsenal, with a game in hand.
Manchester United 1, Burnley 1. It was a dismal display at Old Trafford from Manchester United, with Ten Hag being booed for his substitutions, booed at full-time as well. Dismal's probably a little bit over the top because, I mean, he said afterwards, we are one of the most entertaining and dynamic teams in the country, creating good chances and playing good football. Obviously, he was just like doing his comedy sketch bit, right? Okay, he doesn't mean that. There's no way he believes that they're playing good football. The fact is that Burnley had more shots on goal and more possession than Manchester United in the game and could have won it. So, look, obviously, things aren't going great. But I looked at Manchester United's fixtures between now and the end of the season. Are you worried?
Of course I'm worried, because we're rubbish. So it doesn't matter who we're playing, as we proved this week. We've played probably two of the three worst teams in the division, scraped to a victory against Sheffield United, thanks mainly to Bruno Fernandes, and not managed to beat Burnley, and actually could have lost that game. So, listen, it's dismal as far as Erik ten Hag is concerned, and it's very strange for him to be coming out and making those kind of comments. I do wonder if the way that he's conducting himself in front of the media now is a sign that he knows his days are numbered, his tenure is coming to an end, because he seems to be settling a few scores, banning certain reporters from asking questions at press conferences because he doesn't like what they've written about him. Probably it won't be long until he turns on one or two high-profile players. I mean, he wasn't particularly overly supportive of Marcus Rashford in the wake of that ridiculous tweet that he put out last week. So I think it's a sad end to his tenure, but I think his tenure is coming to an end. And I'm rapidly coming round to the idea that Thomas Tuchel as Manchester United manager might just be the way forward.
Yeah, he decided that this morning when we were getting ready for the podcast. He said, I've had enough now. Just get Tuchel in for a couple of seasons. Forget all this longevity nonsense. Just get him in. Just get it sorted out and that's it. Yeah, we'll see what happens. They've got Crystal Palace away from home live on TalkSport. Me and Crook are going together to Manchester United against Arsenal. Newcastle, that's live on TalkSport. I'll be there for that one as well. And then the final day of the season against Brighton. They might not get another point here, Crook.
Thank you. That's going to cheer me right up. They'll beat Brighton. Everybody beats Brighton. Everybody beats Brighton.
Can we officially take the little ball genius title away from him now? Or is that what we're saying?
Yes, I believe you. I believe you can. Yeah, yeah. I may have gone a bit too early with that.
Just a little bit. Burnley, however, are making a fist of staying in the Premier League. And it's quite amazing, really, when you look at the bottom of the table, that Burnley, Luton and Nottingham Forest are all separated by just 1 point, having all played 35 games. So there's three games to go. And Burnley play Sheffield United. Burnley play Nottingham Forest, don't they, on the final day of the season. Nottingham Forest play Sheffield United and Burnley between now and then, and get the results of their appeal against their points deduction. So, Nottingham Forest, if they were to get any points back, they've been already docked four, but if they were to get 2 points back, then maybe this could be quite a limp end to the season, couldn't it, Scott?
Yeah, I fancy Forest, whatever happens points-wise, to stay up. I'm going to be at the Luton-Everton game Friday for TalkSport, so I'm really looking forward to that one.
What a belter.
But Everton, I mean, well, you know, it would have been even more exciting maybe a week or so ago, but fair play to Sean Dyche for getting Everton away from problems. But look, I think Luton missed a trick, obviously, again at the weekend. Yes, Wolves had some players back, but, you know, they've got to be picking up points. What I saw in that Forest performance against Manchester City was a team, and I did say to you on Thursday that I thought City might struggle a little bit because one, Forest just where they are normally, but two, what they had days before and what went on. So, I don't know what the atmosphere was like at the City Ground, but I imagine it was very good. And certainly I thought tactics were spot on from Nuno. So I just think, you know, current form, where they are on the table, and even though Burnley are doing really well and making a fist for it, you know, Newcastle at home, Spurs away, I think come Forest at home in that last game of the season, they might already be down.
Yeah, unfortunately for Nuno's team, Chris's missus leave Forest looking for the wood through the tricky trees, don't they? I mean, how many chances did he miss in that game, Crook? It was unbelievable.
What was the message we got from Adrian Durham? Chris wouldn't, which was quite funny. I mean, listen,
it's not funny. You've never been there. You don't know what it's like. The pressure's high. But it was like, how? It's like literally 6 yards out twice in the game. And actually, he had the chance to make himself an Arsenal legend.
It's hard to attack him too much because you look at his chance conversion rate. I think it was 40% going into the game at the weekend. But you've got to say, if you're talking about the title, it might just give Arsenal fans hope, the number of chances that City gave up. I know they were missing a couple of key players, but it wasn't as convincing as the 2-0 scoreline suggested. But I'm going to agree with Scott when it comes to the relegation picture. I think the fact that Forest created so many opportunities against a top-class opponent, I think they'll pick up enough points to keep themselves safe. Obviously, depending what happens with the outcome of their appeal into the points deduction, because there is a small possibility that actually it could be seen as a frivolous appeal and maybe they might get another 2 points taken away. I don't think that will happen, but I'm not sure they're going to be successful
in
having them overturned either.
It's not fair, is it, right? It's too late in the season now. Come on, let's get it sorted out. Let's decide it, but at the end of the week before everyone plays again. Because, you know, 3 games to go, you know, Luton need to know whether or not they've got a chance of staying up or not. And Forest need to know whether or not they need to win games or draw games. This is not fair. Let's get it sorted.
I think they will. I think probably by about Wednesday, Thursday, we'll have a decision on that. But I think Forest fixtures are quite kind. Obviously, you've got Luton in the mix as well. But when was the last time they won a game? I mean, it's been a real struggle, isn't it, for Rob Edwards' side. I think Bournemouth, the only victory they've got in their last, 12 matches, something like that. So it looks to me like they've run out of a little bit of steam at just the wrong time of the season.
Yeah, apparently they started okay in the game against Wolves, but it then just sort of faded. And Wolves have got quality finishes, haven't they? I mean, if you go back and think, when Cunha and Huang first got involved in the Premier League, I don't think people were sitting there thinking to themselves, these are two absolute top marksmen. However, Gary O'Neill has formed them into a partnership. They've been there for well over a year before he got there, by the way. He's pushed them together and worked with them to form them into a partnership. They were deadly. They've been deadly all season. What a terrific job he has done at Wolverhampton Wanderers. And although I know he...
There's a good stat about those two.
Go on.
There's a good stat about those two. That was actually the first time in the calendar year that Huang and Cunha have been able to start a game together. Incredible.
Yeah. Yet they've still actually even muddled through, even with them out as well, which has been incredibly important for them. So look, I know that he, you know, sometimes doesn't always hit the right mark in his interviews with some of the things that he says about the referees or whatever. I know that people think he goes on about it too much now, but largely he's always pretty on point. And also, he's done a great job for Wolves, and he's there to do a good job for Wolves, and I think they've done very well. Luton have faded, as you say. I think it sort of fallen apart a little bit behind the scenes there, and all the injuries have taken their toll, I think. And they just can't find a goal. I mean, Carlton Morris is their only source of goals at this moment in time, and that's a worry. Here's a question. Do you think a Premier League club will take a chance on him if and when they are relegated, Scott?
On Carlton Morris?
Yeah.
No, honestly.
Really?
I don't think he's scored...
A lot of goals in the Premier League.
How many has he got in the Premier League?
I think he's got over 10 goals
now.
In the Premier League, yeah.
Well, he obviously went through a period where he wasn't scoring, but that is a good number. I didn't realise he'd scored that many, to be fair. Look, possibly, but my gut feeling is no. There might well be some clubs coming up. There might be some clubs who are sort of bottom end of the Prem and seen him and he's done a job and I can maybe do it again. But my gut feeling, I'm feeling harsh now, but my gut feeling is no.
It is 10, so there you go. He's in double figures, 10 Premier League.
That's a good number. Well, that's a really good number for someone who's been in the struggling side all season, you have to say. So he could definitely argue his point that, look, you put me in a side that gives me more chances and, you know, I can do that again. And anyone who hits double figures...
As well, by the way.
Yeah, anyone who hits double figures. So, you know... The stats suggest yes. My gut feeling is if Luton go down, he'll still be a Luton player next season.
Maybe he'll be there to help them come back up if that's what they decide to do. Big week this week on Talk Sport because we've got Champions League football Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday night, Chelsea against Tottenham and Aston Villa's game as well in the Europa League against Olympiakos. I wonder if Evangelos Marinakis will be there with the Olympiakos Twitter feed in his hand, ready to tweet the minute a decision doesn't go his way. More football for you Friday night, Luton against Everton. Scott will be there for that. And Saturday, we are with Arsenal against Bournemouth. So a big, big week on TalkSport. Sunday, I'm going to Brighton versus Aston Villa to watch Aston Villa try and clinch the top four. Crook's going to... Where are you going on Sunday? You're going... Oh, no, you're not going anywhere because it was too far for you to travel, wasn't it? And you thought, oh, Liverpool are out of it now, so I can't be bothered. Perry's going to Chelsea, West Ham. And then Monday Night Football takes us to Selhurst Park, where it's Crystal Palace against Manchester United. Then we've got Tuesday night, Wednesday night football as well. So listen, It's all going off on
Talksport. Don't forget the playoffs as well. EFL playoffs. Yeah,
that's what I meant. Tuesday and Wednesday night football is the playoffs. Isn't it? The playoffs start. We've got big old League One, League Two playoffs, semi-finals, then the Championship semi-finals. The only place to hear them is on Talksport. I'll be at the League One final. I'll be doing the Championship playoff final as well. The next month is going to be sensational. It really is. And what I love is that all is getting decided on Talksport. It's the following weekend, actually. We've got Fulham against Manchester City, which is the second from last weekend, but City have got another game midweek against Tottenham. We've got that as well. It's going to be decided on Talks. They lift the trophy, whoever it is, it will be live on Talks. Love it. Scott, thank you very much for taking a break from your photo shoots. We appreciate it. Crook, thank you for not ever getting involved in a photo shoot. We will see you later.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.